Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think that one of the reasons why I became a painter is because within that class, and very much through the way that Helen spoke about painting, I felt like I could do anything with this material, that it was limitless. And that was, you know, I don't know how old I was, 20 years old, perhaps. I mean, it was just this incredibly intoxicating feeling that I was at the beginning of this sort of endlessness. And I was just completely taken in. And I think the way, too, that Helen was able to really connect painting with one's life and with, I mean, there was always poetry and there were stories. And, you know, it wasn't just we're learning how to make a painting technically. It was like we were learning how to live our lives.
I'm delighted to welcome Helen O'Leary and Barbara Campbell Thomas to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. Helen O'Leary was born in Wexford, Ireland. She earned an MFA from the School of the Art Institute in Chicago, and she has been honored with the Rome Prize from the American Academy in Rome, the John Simon Guggenheim Fellowship, two Pollock Krasner Awards, the Joan Mitchell Award for Painting and Sculpture, among others. She has attended many residencies, including the McDowell Residency in New York and the Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture in Maine. And her extensive exhibition record features work shown at the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the MAC in Belfast, Ireland, the National Gallery of Art in Ireland, the Leslie Heller Gallery in New York, and the Contemporary Arts Center in Australia. She lives in Jersey City, New Jersey, in the U.S., and Leitrim, Ireland, and Helen is the mother to one daughter. My second guest is Barbara Campbell Thomas, and she lives and works in Climax, North Carolina. Her work combines painting and quilting, overlaying their material vocabularies to create complex formal dialogues within each painting that resonate with the details of her own life and the history of each medium. She came relatively late to quilting, which she learned from her mother, but quickly realized its power as an art form traditionally practiced by women, which informs and expands the range of her painting. Barbara's paintings have been exhibited in museums and galleries across the U.S. at the Wetherspoon Art Museum, the Painting Center in New York City, the Atlanta Center for Contemporary Art, the Marsha Wood Gallery in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Urban Institute of Contemporary Art in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She has been an artist in residence at the Hambridge Center for Creative Arts and Sciences, as well as at the Skowhegan School for Painting and Sculpture. And she is a recent recipient of the North Carolina Artist Fellowship. Barbara is an associate professor of art at UNC Greensboro, and she is the mother to two sons. I am so delighted to welcome both of you, Helen and Barbara, to the podcast today and have you talk about your life, your work, and your friendship. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Yes. Okay. So, Helen, I want to hear a bit more about your work. Can you maybe start by bringing me back to something in your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today? Have you always wanted to be an artist?
I think so. I didn't know what an artist was, but I loved making things. Mm-hmm. And everything around me was handmade. We grew up in a time in Ireland where if you didn't make it, you didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So it was, we made our world, and we lived in a world that bore the mark of our ancestors, you know. Mm. Every spoon, every chair, every floor was handmade.
That's beautiful. So yeah, just this idea of being a maker, maybe not necessarily being an artist, but being a maker was just a part of the world you grew up in.
Absolutely. You know, you looked at a sheep and you knew it would be a jumper by the end of the year. You know? That would be something else, and it would be something else. So this idea of, or lobster pots. You know, my father made lobster pots, and I can remember him weaving these things and cutting the sallies and growing things. And it was this sense of the future always, you know, sowing the sallies so we could have the lobster pots, so we could have the lobsters, so we could buy a boat, or he made boats actually. So everything was about the next thing, or making the sails, the bolts of linen. So I really didn't know what an artist was, but I knew about making, you know.
And you knew about function, certainly. Do you feel like form was, like form and beauty and aesthetic, was that part of?
Incredible pragmatism and incredible beauty.
Yeah.
Barbara, everything had a name of the person who made it.
Barbara, what about you? Do you point back to something in your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist?
Yeah, I feel as though less, I mean, it's similar to Helen in the sense that I don't really remember a moment where I determined that that was what I wanted to be, or that that was something that was in my future. I think it was really more a kind of an orientation or a way of thinking. And so I've thought about this quite a bit, and I think this is something that I've realized more of late. And when I was a young child, my father and I would talk in the evenings right before I would go to bed. And it was this sort of scenario where I knew I could pretty much ask him anything. And I remember at one point asking him this conversation, effectively wanting to know why space went on forever. And this, I think, was kind of question that was in my head for kind of a long time. And I feel like I had asked him this before, and I don't know that he had given me a sufficient answers, but I remember this one time he did. And basically he said to me, imagine a brick wall built in space. And so, of course, I imagined this brick wall. And he said, now, tell me, what is on one side of that brick wall? And I said, well, of course, space. And then he said, well, what's on the other side? And of course I said space. And there was like this way in which at that moment it clicked for me. And I think there was this sense of the way that a kind of boundary or a kind of demarcation actually could be a means by which you could access a kind of endlessness. And I think about that actually, even like when I think about the structure of a painting now. And for me, like that moment, like I think with that moment, there is this sense of possibility that this notion of anything potentially being possible, like opened up for me. And I feel like that orientation is what being an artist is about in so many ways. So I feel like, so that was kind of intoxicating at a young age.
What a great story. I see the brick walls in your paintings now.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's something that it's always been there. And then I think in these last couple of years, like that story, I've realized kind of what I think as we do, like kind of looking back, like we realize what these moments meant and how they kind of oriented us in ways that were impactful.
Did that memory come to you like recently, or is it something you've kind of just remembered all along?
I've always known of it because it struck me so pointedly, and you know, it's always been there because it meant so much, because it was this moment where suddenly I felt like I could understand, even though obviously I couldn't. But I think that as time has gone on and I think about the way I think about painting, that is part of it, you know, like that orientation for sure.
Okay, back to you, Helen. I'm wondering if you could describe your art, maybe for somebody who hasn't yet had the pleasure of viewing it. What medium do you work with, and you know, a little bit about the materials you use? Just talk about your process.
I knit with wood. I kind of pull things out of their own ruin. There's nothing better than my studio floor with lots of failed paintings, and I just cut them up and rejoin them in the most labor intensive way possible. I've got a bridge joining way of putting them together, and I like to fix things. You know, when something falls off the table that's really precarious, which happens all the time, I don't clamp things down. And I love that moment of the provisional. I love that moment of it could fall off the table, and they do. And I know they're finished when they no longer crumble, when they can take a really good belt off the ground. I use egg tempera. I use silver point. I use pigments. I use dyes, natural dyes. I use reclaimed pigments from acid mine cleanup. I use, I love materiality. Mostly I use wood, linen, always portrait linen, because I always think they're self-portraits. These refixed and remade and refixed and reworked and objects.
Thank you. Oh, I love your work. I can't wait to hear. I can't wait to hear Barbara talk about it too, because she's talked about your work to me before, and she's a very, very big fan. So
that goes right to Barbara.
True.
Barbara, what about you? Can you talk a little bit about what your paintings look like, and just a little bit about your process?
Well, so perhaps not surprisingly, materiality is really important to me as well. They are, you know, I think of painting, and I talk to my students about this, you know, I think of painting more, less about optics and more about physicality. You know, like it's really about like the presence of physicality for me. And so the surfaces are, they're made of sewn, pieced and sewn fabric. And that is the very first layer. So essentially the first layer of my paintings is really like the top layer of a quilt. It's, you know, the sort of piecing together that we see that sits on the top of a quilt is really where my paintings begin. And then they get that layer, gets stretched. And when it is stretched, the kind of geometry starts to swell. And I really think of that as almost like a kind of inhalation and an exhalation kind of within the geometry itself, which I really, when that, it's so simple, but when that began to happen, I was really excited about that. And then at that moment, that's when I begin to add paint. And then I also begin to add collage. And the collage is essentially made of failed paintings, you know, basically paintings that didn't work, that get cut up. And so, you know, similarly, there is this way in which the studio is this kind of self-generating system where, I mean, and I think it's really important to say too, that the failed paintings are genuinely, you know, they failed. I mean, I think that, they do have to have that aspect of that they were fought for, and I hoped that they would have worked, but they just didn't. And then there is this moment when they get taken off and there is the possibility of them having new life. And and so, you know, that's kind of the makeup of the paintings, but they do have this kind of shifting sort of material surface. Lots of color too. Color is something that's always been there. Intense color.
And you primarily paint with acrylic?
Yeah, I do.
And spray paint. I know you use some spray paint, right?
Yep.
It's interesting that both of you have this, it's like this puzzling together of pieces as sort of the base or maybe the initial layer of your work. Like you're taking these objects and you're trying to see how they fit together. I don't know as much about your process, Helen, but that's what I imagine. Like, you know, just getting these wood pieces to sort of connect and form like a larger function. I love sort of thinking about the steps of how an artist's processes work, whereas, you know, like somebody else might do a base layer of, you know, a drawing first, or, but it seems like you guys are both taking smaller pieces and sort of working them in.
Absolutely. But I think I reversed as well when I build and build and build and build. And then I want it to be like a shrunken sock. You know, I want it to go down small again. So I'll break up paintings I'm happy with. So I feel like the painting is a carnivore. I look back through my phone. I'm like, that was a nice piece. What did I do? I know where it went. There's a tiny bit of red in this new one. But I feel like they're a time capsule for me. You know, it's more of a, I'm a grazing cow in the studio or something. You know, I just keep going at it.
Oh, you're full of good metaphors. The shrunken sock and the grazing cow. Poetic, Helen. I like the way you think about your work.
Farm language.
Yeah, farm language.
But if I could add something too, I mean, yeah. I think there is this way. I mean, I you know, see that affinity. And I think there is also this, like, it's almost like, why would you sort of walk in a straight line when you can kind of like meander back and forth and sort of see all that is to be seen? I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel as though, like, the piecing and sort of this notion of like a kind of whole just sort of built piece by piece by piece by piece like that. And I don't know what it is fundamentally about that, but that's been present for me for a long time. And there's a kind of logic that just resonates with living, perhaps.
Mm. I think that's how you build a life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have to bring up this quote that Helen, you had emailed to us earlier, this Adrian Rich quote. It says, "A new century, even new technology, doesn't of itself produce newness. It is live human beings looking in all directions who will do this." Mm. Why did you send us that?
You know, I feel right now in this time that we have to be like a lighthouse. You know, we have to keep looking around at all possibilities. Mm. And I think with painting, I've always looked to people outside of painting to see what they're doing. You know, I look to people who farm, people who are in the sciences, people who write. I've got this incredible crush on writers, you know. I wish I could write like that. So I'm always looking outside at song, at composers. Mm. How do you make that work? How do you write an opera? And I will sit there and figure out with them how they write an opera. Of course, I'll never write an opera, but I'm always looking to feed painting. It's like my job to feed painting with the curiosity of all the people I admire around me. Mm.
Mm. That's beautiful. I love that. Barbara, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that quote for me, there is this way. I mean, and I actually, you know, I say these things to my students too. Like, there is this, it's very similar for me in the ways that I feel as though so often I can see what I do more clearly through the eyes of people who are not necessarily visual artists, but are kind of doing what I'm doing, but at a slant, you know, or just in a different vein. And it just gives me this really helpful perspective. But it is also about how do you kind of surround yourself with the things that will feed you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like back to that initial, you know, vision that image that I relayed about that conversation with my father, this sort of sense of possibility. And so, like, that sort of for me means that I'm always kind of looking to kind of see where that's going to come from, because there is almost a belief that it's just inevitably there. I just have to be kind of ready to see it or open to it, whether it's in the words of writers and it is often writers, you know, and I, you know, I listen to books a lot in the studio. And there is this way in which, like, what I've come to realize is that the best space for me in the studio in terms of painting is when I'm listening to fiction, because I feel as though it occupies the parts of me that really are not helpful when I'm looking at my painting. And it allows me to kind of occupy this sort of world in tandem with the one that I'm inhabiting in this way that just has been so, you know, the last couple of years has been just really rich. Mm.
At dinner just tonight, my oldest son, he's 8. He was just kind of like staring off into space. And I'm like, what are you thinking about? And he's like, nothing. And I'm like, no, you can't ever think about nothing. Like, what, you know, kind of more like doing the mom thing, like prompting him to tell me what he's thinking about. And you know, then John, my husband, and I kind of got in this conversation about like what parts of your thought are actually conscious thought and what are subconscious. And, you know, John was kind of relating it to like a musician. I was kind of talking about an artist, like when you get in flow, you know, and like what, when you're in the studio and you're making these decisions, are they all conscious decisions or are they, do you get in this mental state where they become maybe part of your subconscious and, you know, they feel like more meditative in a way that you're not like, I am thinking about putting this, I'm just doing it. Like I'm just in this state. Like, so I like that idea of the books sort of maybe occupying this more linear brain space for you. Mm-hmm. And then sort of this active, like, or this inactive, but physical brain space, physical body. I feel like, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, then something can else, the part, you know, the other parts can take over then.
Yeah.
You know, that. And maybe too, like for me, like as a teacher, I think sometimes like, you know, I have to talk to my, you know, my job with them is to sort of help them in a way solve problems. Mm-hmm. But if I go to my studio like that, it's just like, it's just the death of things. You know, it's not about, you can't solve the problems, you know, in your studio like that. It's not, 1 + 1 = 2. So I don't know. Like that's part of that for me too.
Yeah. Helen, do you listen to anything while you're working in the studio?
I am such an expat. I listen to John Kelly's Mystery Train on Irish radio and I love it. And then I'll miss a lot because I'm using bandsaws and tools. So then I'll play it back.
That's awesome. Okay, so you two are here talking to me today because I had shared with you, Barbara, that I had this idea for kind of doing more thematic episodes moving forward and seeing like who I could pair together to maybe talk about a certain topic. And, you know, I had this idea for talking about mentorship and, you know, sort of artist friendships in this relationship of like, you know, one artist having a mentor or a guide, a lighthouse for them, somebody who they feel like they can look up to and befriend. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, when I was working with you in the Crit Group program, that you talked about Helen, this amazing artist mom that has been like that mentor and lighthouse for you. You know, and then I don't know, it was like a month later that I was like, oh, like I should talk to Barbara and Helen on mentorship. This would make a great episode. And so here we are today. And
great.
You know, and although I've only known you for a little bit, Barbara, I feel like you already have a great mentor presence in my life. So I'm like, we're kind of like a little circle here, maybe, which feels nice. But yeah, I wanted to hear you guys sort of talk about, you know, the influence that you've had on each other. Maybe you could start by sharing how you know each other and how did you get connected and what was your friendship to start, and then we can talk sort of about how that has evolved.
Mm-hmm. I feel as though I should begin.
You should begin.
Because I'm the reason why you're here. Well, the reason that I know Helen is because I signed up for Painting One with Helen when I was a student at Penn State. And I actually, at that point, was pursuing a BFA in printmaking. And then I took Helen's Painting One class, which was oil painting, beginning oil painting. And it just, there was no printmaking for me after that. It was just, this is what I, you know, I just fell in love with it. And I tell my students this too, like there is this way in which, I mean, again, I'm going to reference that story with my father. Like, I think that one of the reasons why I became a painter is because within that class and very much through the way that Helen spoke about painting, I felt like I could do anything with this material, that it was limitless. And that was just, you know, I don't know how old I was, 20 years old, perhaps. I mean, it was just this incredibly intoxicating feeling that I was at the beginning of this sort of endlessness. And I just, you know, I was just completely taken in. And I think that there is that sense. I feel as though when you sort of are confronted with this sensation that you're engaged in something that could be anything, that could, that feels so huge, for me, that I just, that was what I wanted to be part of. And I think the way too that Helen was able to really connect painting with one's life and with, I mean, there was always poetry and there were stories and, you know, it wasn't just we're learning how to make a painting technically. It was like we were learning how to live our lives. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think about like what better education for going out and being an artist than to have all of that wrapped up together. Mm-hmm. So that was where I first met Helen. And, you know, I just feel like too, now watching your work, Helen, you know, evolve over these many years, like it's just always, always just leaping ahead. And it's always, I mean, undoing me in like the best way, and just, you know, showing me a kind of barometer of constant curiosity and what that can be. And it's incredibly inspiring. Hmm. So, yeah.
Helen, what was Barbara like as a student?
You know, she was talking about that. I can remember her in that class, and I can remember the joy. Number one, incredible colorist. Hmm. Number two, just wild with the brush. The brush moved everywhere. I couldn't imagine her going back to printmaking. It is a glorious, glorious craft. But she was just painting all the time. You know, it was the light switch was on.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was all about light and beauty. And we would talk about constructing a painting just like you construct a life and making decisions and being wrong. I remember we talked about being wrong a lot.
Mm. Yeah. And
that was that space where maybe you could fit. But yeah, it was ridiculous. You were a painter. You came in as a painter. And such a colorist. Very few people have had that ability that she had at that early age, 20 years of age, just the understanding of how color worked and how light worked and how shapes worked. Mm. I remember going out to another faculty member and going, we have one here, you know, we have one here.
Mm, that's so nice. okay. And so how did your relationship sort of continue and how did you stay in touch and kind of remain present in each other's life?
Well, I went off to grad school, you know, from Penn State. I went to Berkeley, and then at the end of that 2 years, I actually came back to Penn State to teach. I remember at that point you all were periodically bringing folks back, alum, just to teach, and so I came back to teach a couple classes, and so of course got connected back up with Helen then. And so I just, you know, I feel as though we kind of go in and out of each other's lives in a way. I mean, a couple of years ago, Helen, you came to UNC Greensboro for a show.
And then I saw your show at the Painting Center.
Right. So I think, but it's always, I always know what Helen's doing.
Mm. And vice versa, kind of waving from a distance.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Does technology aid sort of in your, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, when Barbara posts something or a poem, I'm like, oh, damn, that's Barbara.
Barbara, what has it meant for you to have a mentor in your life? Do you feel like all artists need mentors, or do you feel like it's something that, you know, maybe people just, it just depends on your personality. Like you might need a mentor. Has it felt, you know, like something that you, I don't know, couldn't live without? Or do you feel like you would have connected with Helen in another way?
I feel as though it, you know, I don't think anything, I feel like with Helen, I mean, I feel like it's been such an effortless thing, you know, and it's maybe been a natural I don't know, a meeting of like-minded thinkers. Listening tonight, just hearing the way Helen speaks, like, it's so funny because I listen to you speak, Helen, and I think, I feel as though I've digested I have digested this thinking, and I think that there's a way when it so resonates with mm-hmm. me, you know, and I think that, so I don't know. I don't know that I ever like intentionally sought someone who I thought of as a mentor per se, but like, you know, when you ask me this question, it's just like, there was no question who for me it was, you know, like it, because I just think of impact.
Yeah. Maybe it's more just like finding parts of yourself in another person, and, you know, recognizing that we're all connected in a way, and we have, you know, especially when you're talking about art imitating life and life imitating art, and how, you know, I think there are a lot of artists who think that way, but there's also a lot that don't, you know, and yeah. Mm-hmm. Helen, do you have somebody that you would consider a mentor in your life?
I do. I when I left Ireland, I didn't have a female teacher, you know, in Dublin. And when I went to Chicago, I had several really stellar female teachers who let me into their lives, fed me at their kitchen table. Mm. And I had Julia Fish, Susanna Coffey, and Michiko Tatiani. And Michiko used to bring me the cutoffs of her, because she had those shaped canvases. She would bring me her canvas, and Julia would bring me over to her house and show me how an artist lived. And Susanna Coffey, I shared a studio with her as a grad student. I rented part of her loft, and they let me into their lives in such a way that was so respectful, that we were equal. We were equal, and they saw potential in me. Mm-hmm. And saw something in me that they wanted to help. You know, they helped me. Mm. So I never forgot that. I never forgot that's what my education was. Where it was before Facebook or Instagram, so it was formal enough on the one hand, but it was also very human. It was so human. And I was pregnant in grad school. They would sit with me and talk to me about the choice I was making to be a mother, but never in a way that it was damning.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking about that too, like just wondering if, you know, this intense like connection to somebody as a mentor role, if not only being an artist, but seeing somebody who's a mother, like walk through that space, you know, if that influenced you in a specific way, you know, thinking of you, Barbara, it sounds like Helen, maybe some of your teachers weren't parents at the time.
They weren't parents, but they showed me how an artist could live. Mm. They were very clear that they lived on their wits. You know, it wasn't, nobody had a trust fund. There were women in the art world in the 80s in Chicago. Couldn't have been easy. They were, you know, and they were very successful. Mm-hmm. And they were not, they didn't diss me when I said, I'm going to do this. You know, I want to be a mother. Yeah. I'm not a decision just to be, I'm not neutered. I'm not going for that life.
Right.
You know?
Right. What about you, Barbara?
You know, listening to what you say, Helen, like I love that notion of that aspect of they let you into their lives. And I think that that's really, I mean, that's how I feel about you too. And I think of moments like being in your home and you having us over for meals, and just like this way in which that's so impactful to a young person, mm-hmm. that someone who you respect just gives you that respect back. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I think there were moments where that was sort of shocking to me, and such a so impactful. Mm-hmm. And I think that means a lot, and that really means a lot, I think, as you move into a life as an artist, where I think you do, you know, it's, there are so many ups and downs. And so like to have a kind of an internal resolve that this is what I'm going to do, and that I believe that I must do this, you know, that I feel as though having people around you who affirm that in you just is so huge. Mm.
Yeah. It's respect, permission, and support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three things.
Sure.
I'm proud to share that this episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by Faherty. Faherty is a family-run clothing brand fueled by purpose and optimism. They make high-quality, sustainably-minded, feel-good fragrance that you'll be proud to wear. This clothing that's made not just to last the season, but a lifetime of wear. For the past few years, I've recently tried to curb my clothes shopping habits and change what I wear to reflect my values. I've pared down my clothes to things I feel good in and feel good about, which means buying less fast fashion and making fewer purchases overall, but buying more high-quality pieces when I do buy my clothes. Faherty brand fits right into this model, and I'm kind of obsessed with their Arlie Day pants. They are super comfortable, but help me look slightly more put together than my usual yoga pants outfits. Anybody feel me? Faherty brand believes in social justice and has partnered with and supported some organizations you may recognize, like United Natives, Artists for Peace and Justice, the Trevor Project, and the Audre Lorde Project. They're also holding their company to a high standard with sustainability, designing clothes to last that are made with low impact on the environment. You can shop Faherty by heading to fahertybrand.com/artistmother. Use code ARTISTMOTHER, all lowercase, all together, for 25% off your purchase. It really means a lot when you support the brands that help support our podcast. Check out Faherty's website today and use code ARTISTMOTHER for a 25% off discount. That's pretty generous, guys. Thank you so much, Faherty, for supporting this podcast and our community. And now back to our episode. Okay, so both of you, I want to hear you talk a little bit more about the overlap of artist mother identity. You know, just wondering if you, you know, have, if you feel like you've ever made maybe some compromises in your art career for the sake of motherhood, or if you remember some times where, I don't know, it was really challenging, like you were wondering, what am I doing here? Can both of these things coexist?
I would say it's the other way around. I think the compromises I've made would be probably as a mother because of an art career. And if I was to do it again, I would spend more time, less time traveling around, less time on ambition, I suppose, and more time just making up my own world and letting that world be complete where I was. Because I spent a lot of Eva's youth traveling.
What about you, Barbara?
I mean, I feel, you know, there definitely have been hard times for sure. I mean, I think especially when my children were much younger. And, you know, for me, when, you know, I love them intensely. I was never one of these people who just, or women who was like, oh, I'm gonna have children. I don't know. I just didn't think about that really, you know, and which is maybe a strange thing to say. But so when my children came, there was for me a real, I don't know, I was thrown into a pretty intense sort of like, you know, who am I now? And how do I reconcile these different parts of who I am? And, you know, I think I was also at a moment just in terms of my work, things were very much in flux. Like I was figuring a lot of things out and I felt very unseated in the studio, and I can look back and see how necessary that time was. But I just, yeah, I would, you know, like, I don't know. I think, and I have these, like, I you know, I despise Mother's Day cards because I just, like, there is this way in which oh my gosh, it's like being run through the ringer. I as a mother, and just like this intense self, who am I and who am I now in relation to this being who you have this intense passion and love for? And I mean, it just turned everything over in the best way. And, you know, so I think that I don't really know what kind of answer this is, except that I've found, being a mother to be this intense crucible, and I am grateful for that. I feel as though it's helped me as a person. I feel as though it is helping me just ask questions of the art world that I think need to be asked. You know, like I am resentful of the fact that I never saw myself in art history. And a lot of what I do is in response to that. And I think about that relative to my students too. You know, I mean, I was just in conversation with a colleague who's an art historian, and we were speaking about representation and the need for to create representation. And she said to me, but we shouldn't have to do that. You know, like there is a way in which like, you know, that shouldn't have to be. And I don't stay there long, but I think there are, but I feel as though it's part of the picture. And for me, that is wrapped up in the ways in which like one, you know, for so long, you know, you couldn't be a mother and an artist. And you know, that angers me.
I think I was enraged, you know, when I can remember when I was largely pregnant graduating, and you go up on the stage to get your certificate, and the president of the school I went to just looked at my stomach and said, good luck. And it wasn't good luck in a way that it was like, you know, too bad. I remember another person, one of my male teachers said, too bad, you were a really good painter. And I
hope his career tanked.
I was absolutely enraged. I was enraged. And I didn't want the art world that I looked at. I wanted my own art world. And I wanted my world that I would build with children and animals and plants and houses and other artists to be the new world that I would inhabit.
And I feel as though it's, you know, to hear you say that now, Helen, especially in this moment, it just seems so obvious. I mean, obviously this moment that we're in, there's this, I feel this sort of reckoning on so many levels of all the ways in which just what has been is not working. And, you know, I feel as though our students, you know, they're not going to, they won't put up with it. I don't know. I mean, already the things that they say to me, and and so I'm hopeful, actually, that there will be shifts.
The system was so silly. It was so silly and so empty. I remember when somebody talked to me about why artists shouldn't have children, and I just looked at them going, I'm not signing on for that world.
Yeah.
That's not a world I want to be in. I remember just feeling that and knowing viscerally that I would go back to Ireland, buy a little cottage, and have a different world. If that's what it meant to be an artist in the US, I was leaving it. And in worse, believe me, but I would just do something else. It wasn't a decision for me. I wanted to be a mother, and I wanted to be an artist.
Sometimes I wonder if it's mothering that this is probably not going to sound very positive, but it's not so much that like it's being an artist that is so much in opposition to being a parent, but it's that being a parent is just so hard no matter what you want to do. Like I just hearing you guys talk and like thinking about my day and just like, I just can't even have, it was just one of those days where like I had to ask my children to please give me 5 minutes where they just don't ask a question. Like, I just don't want to hear another question, you know, let alone like scraping together some studio time in which I feel like, you know, clear-headed enough to make decent decisions. And I mean, it was just was one of those days where I was like, I'm just going to stick with email today because I'm not, you know, it's just not going to. But I don't know. It's like, to answer my own question, I do think being an artist is a very unique thing. And it, you know, it does sort of come into contrast with parenting in a way that maybe some other careers don't. But I don't know, like the way we always frame it is that like, it's the art part of it that is, you know, the struggle. But that needs to change, mm-hmm. you know, but then part of me is like, I don't know if it's like, are our expectations for mothering too high? Like, are mm-hmm. we?
Yeah, I would say yes.
You know, like, am I just beating myself over the head, whether I took out art of it, you know, am I still like, am I ever going to be give enough to my kids or answer enough questions or self-sacrifice enough? Like, that's just not the kind of mother I am or I don't want to be. It just feels like that tension is going to exist whether I'm an artist or not. Maybe. I don't know. Am I making sense?
Yeah. So yeah. Pointing to the definition of mother is potentially, you know, needing to change.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's also in an art world that was stacked against women.
Yes, totally. Absolutely. And I'm not dismissing that.
I look around at any class, it's 80% women.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not 90% women. And I'm like, where do they all go?
I know.
You know, you have a society that it was, look at art history. How many women did you see? How many mothers did you see when you look back at it? And it was
none.
All male. And so we start there. You know, that's where you and you're in a career where you probably have to juggle a couple of jobs to pay rent, pay childcare. You know, I can remember bartending and adding up how much childcare I could afford. It's a tough road, you know, it's just mm-hmm. a tough road.
Maybe that's the ruse that we think it's like, because it's a lifestyle, we can sort of, and it's an identity, we can sort of just be and exist as an artist. And so therefore we can, you know, the rest of our life, it's just going to happen. But then, I don't know, like you realize how hard it is and how much time it does take and how much effort. And then you're like, this just isn't, it's just hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But I always thought the life you build around it is the life you have. And that's success to me.
Mm-hmm.
Painting becomes this incredible armored car mm-hmm. that gets you through life.
Mm.
And I always credit painting for everything, that everything good that's happened to me, I credit painting.
Mm.
And any corner I get in, I'm thinking, okay, paint yourself out of this one, you know, be it a financial hole or a emotional hole. I'm like, okay, painting will get you there. And I think I remember with a small child thinking painting will do this, painting will get us there, painting will buy us the house, painting will get us there. And it really did. I just lost language. More than self.
That's a really hopeful perspective to take. I love that.
Because
I sometimes think like this, if I just gave this up, then everything would be better. You know, like, it's like, why do I toil when I could just, I don't know, do something easier? But I don't know.
But maybe. It's also, it's a way of thinking.
Right.
It's a way of being. Of organizing my time. I mean, on a practical level, but also in terms of, I think that, you know, painting, it's more than just the literal making of a painting. It's this whole, this apparatus
life.
That you have it, you know, and I so agree. Like, it's, It makes it all so rich, you know? I mean, I think that's the thing too, is that definitely, you know, here I live in the middle of nowhere. And I think there was definitely a period of years where I had no idea what I was doing in the studio. And it was, I mean, there, and like, who even cares? I have these small children, I'm not sleeping, you know, whatever. But the through line was that there's this work that I'm doing that, you know, I know, even if it's, I've been here before where it was not working and I figured my way through it. So I don't know. I mean, I just think that this longevity, it means so much.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love, just this idea of it being more cohesive and wholesome than just this thing we do for a few hours every day, you know?
Yeah.
You know, since COVID hit and we've been in lockdown, I've loved making work and showing it to absolutely nobody. Show my garden, I'll show my hands.
I was going to say your chickens come in and see it.
It's incredible delight of just making and making. Mm. And when audiences take, I don't want the cyber audience. I just want to make.
Yeah.
Mm, I think something in that with parenting as well, where you go through those years where you are, you know, I made so many dollhouses and so many wooden toys. You can imagine how many wooden toys I made. And it was the equal to my studio practice. And it was in my studio practice. And it was very rich. Mm-hmm. It was very rich, as was teaching. I can remember those dinners I would put together, and I learned to cook, you know, and I got an old wreck of a house and brought it back to life. And all of that was very rich.
Mm-hmm. And that was painting. I mean, I think that's true. Like that. So that notion again of that doing this it moves beyond it moves beyond the boundaries of this classroom, it just moves into everything. Mm-hmm. And it's never stopped, I think.
And it's not about some dealer taking you on or having some big fancy show somewhere. It was the splintered nature of your life that's where the wealth was, you know, and is. Yeah. Not to say the shows weren't incredible, but when I look back at my life, it's the other things as well, you know, mm-hmm. very much. And the learning how to make a thing and to learning how to build a life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just a question or two more before we wrap up. Wondering just if there's a, you know, if you're thinking 6 months from now or a year from now, do you guys have anything that you're working on either in your studio or in your art career that you're kind of, I don't know, have in the forefront of your mind that is a goal or something something big you're working on right now, other than surviving COVID and the next election and all the chaos of the world right now?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there, you know, so far a couple shows that haven't been canceled, we'll see. But it's like, it's really more about, for me, like, I mean, I'm starting to think of some new facets connected to, I don't know, fabric and sort of things coming, you know, falling off. I don't know. I mean, it's all like, I'm in this sort of like, the work is continuing, and then there are these little things happening off to the side that I really don't know what they are, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's always the studio is kind of has these sort of different sort of spheres of what is this over here that I'm doing? Mm-hmm. Who knows, but
tinkering.
It'll become something. Yeah.
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 What about just you, continuing. Helen?
Yeah. I have a couple of shows that I haven't even asked if they're canceled, so I haven't been
reached. That's a good strategy.
I thought if I don't ask, I won't know.
Yeah.
But I've got this fascination with painting being independent and an artist being independent. So I with my partner, did up an old house in Jersey City. We took it apart, picked it apart, and we rebuilt it. And I wanted the studio to be my museum, my do-it-yourself museum. And I wanted to put a dye garden on the top so it would grow its own color. And I continue to want painting to be, to regenerate its own structures of everything, of support, everything. So I'm thinking along those lines. And I started this 2016, so it's this idea of fortitude and independence and your own everything. Seems like a really good time right now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I want to continue with this sustainable studio. I'm obsessed with sustainability in every facet, in every facet. And this is part of that sustainability. But I'm trying to figure out how to have a softer foot on the earth, you know? So that's with the dye gardens and with the dye cart that the university we're making with Kim Flick right now. We have a dye cart, a pop-up dye cart that we can take out anywhere and to see what color that part of the venue might give. Oh. So little wonderful projects that give me hope.
All of that.
Cadmium green, dark in it, and a cream color. And I remember thinking, I looked at it forever and I thought, that's Barbara. That's exactly Barbara. It had your thoughtfulness. It had your magic. So I want to say this mentor thing goes both ways. You know, I looked at that painting and just learned so much about your thought process and the poetry and the how tight your practice is, you know?
That's a nice thought.
I can remember standing there, you know, I can remember standing there just loving this one painting, going, God damn it, that's good. That was so good.
Thank you. I like that.
So what do you think success is? I'm going to ask you that question.
Me?
Both of you.
I think success is feeling like you've stepped into your life with everything you have, and it is full and it is rich and it is not just you, it touches other people, and that there's, I mean, and that it's always opening up. I think that's it, that it doesn't feel as though it's closing down. It's always opening up.
That's beautiful, Barbara.
It's gorgeous.
I think success for me is, it's living that life of openness and, you know, with all of the threads of the many things that I want to build and be passionate about and enjoy. Because there are many. Like, I consider myself, even though a lot of what I build professionally and a lot of what I'm interested in has to do with the arts and creativity and, you know, like, I love cooking and I love having a beautiful home and having a, you know, a family life that feels positive and thoughtful and, but for me, like, I think sometimes I get caught up in, you know, wanting all of these things, but then maybe resent, like having some like areas of irritation or resentment when I can't like juggle all the balls, you know? And so I think, like, I'm not doing anything, or I feel like I'm already successful, but I think further success for me would be some of that mental freedom of just letting things be the way they are and not, you know, not being frustrated when one of the balls drops and I have to bend to pick it back up. And, but just like, it's more, yeah, sort of the mental like growth and maturity that needs to happen that I want, just to have self-acceptance and just to say, like, you know, I can do whatever I want to do and it'll be fine, and I can still be a thoughtful, integrated person. And I don't know, I think I like let a lot hang over my head, and I think I would feel more successful if I could let go of some of those thoughts. Mm. That felt very intimate or very vulnerable to say. But yeah, I think that's what's holding me back from success, is, or just feeling successful, is just the, I don't know, like the expectation, you know.
But I think vulnerability is such a strength. It's such a strength. And I think that was my biggest realization as an artist, when I turned that bus around and just bared my vulnerability. And I wasn't trying to be something I wasn't, you know.
You know, today it is thinking about what you just said today. So I'm teaching this graduate seminar, and of course it is online. And today, you know, we're wrestling with this work and with the ways in which it's so hard to speak about what we want to say with precision. And, you know, I'm attempting to do this and realize I'm beginning what I'm saying, and then I sort of lose my train of thought, and it's like this, you know, it feels like this kind of train wreck. And then, and yet, I don't know, like I had this moment where I thought, well, we have to have these spaces where we're just, we try to say what we want to say, and even if we can't say it, we still do, and we all do it together. And I think that for me, like these attempts to say what we can't say, and to still nonetheless try and to do it, and somehow maybe we can all piece all of these elements of what we're saying and thinking together. And I just think, oh my gosh, we need this so desperately in the world. And so, like, to what you just said, Kaylin, this notion of vulnerability, I just think, gosh, we just, yeah, we need that on so many levels right now. I'm missing it acutely, you know, out in the world. So to have my students be willing to do that is a real gift.
That's why I like having these conversations, because I feel like, you know, we can't always get this through just Instagram and emails, and like it really takes sitting down and having a longer form conversation, you know, for these things to come out. So I appreciate both of your time. Okay, so I always close with 5 questions just for listeners to get to know you a little better. These are just fun little things. So interested to hear, Helen, who is your biggest art crush?
Today,
Agnes
Dene.
Nice. Barbara, what about you?
Person alive or someone
alive or dead, doesn't matter.
I mean, I would love to meet Hilmoff Clint.
Okay, Helen, what is your favorite place to travel, or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
I would have to say Leitrim, Ireland.
Which is where you're from, where your other home is?
Love to go home.
Yeah. Barbara, what about you?
Oh, I always want to return to Italy. I need to try to go other places, but
once you go somewhere you really love, it's hard to hard to want to go anywhere else. Yes. Okay, what film or book has inspired you greatly?
Breaking the Waves.
Is that a film or book?
It's a film. It's beautifully dark, beautiful cold spaces between very little warmth. And it's got a Northern European bleakness to it that just grabs me.
Breaking the Waves. I'll have to look that one up. Barbara, what about you?
So I'm thinking of just, you know, like recently things that have just rocked me. And so this summer I read this book called Emergent Strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown, which is, you know, really about her social justice work. But I read this and thought, oh my gosh, this is I want to read this in my MFA seminar. Like, this is just, she talks about fractals and she talks about, you know, interaction. I mean, there's just, it's brilliant. And I just feel as though it's like this template, you know, like what we've been saying, a kind of template for living. And it just really, it really struck me.
Helen, what is your favorite meal?
Oh my God, I've been living off a hot plate for 7 months. Anything that somebody else cooked, my favorite meal.
I think I feel the same way. Anything that I am not cooking.
Anything that doesn't have lentils. But it would have to be vegetarian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we've actually done very little. We haven't, you know, we've done a bit of takeout, but oh my gosh, I'm just ready for someone else to, I mean, my husband cooks, thankfully.
We have a dorm fridge and a hot plate. I'm not joking.
Oh my gosh, Helen, that's amazing. Have you been eating lots of eggs from your chickens or your hens laying eggs?
I don't even like eggs.
Yeah.
I paint with eggs, but I don't like eggs.
Yeah. I've been a vegetarian for almost 12 years, and I don't think I really liked eggs before I became a vegetarian. Like, they're okay, but I don't know. Part of me still is like, is this really vegetarian? Like, I'm eating a fetus of a... Sorry for all the egg lovers listening, but it just feels weird. There's something about it that just feels weird as a vegetarian, like... You know.
I feel like a cradle robber.
Yeah. When I eat. Yeah. It's like I'm, I don't know. I don't get it. But, you know.
But I painted them. So there you go. And yeah. I use rabbit skin glue. So.
Well, there you go.
Very little morals.
We are full of contradictions. Okay. And the last question, or it's not a question, but I always like to, at the end, offer, you know, you guys a chance to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work. I know there's lots of people, but you can always, you know, just give a caveat that you can only share a name or two.
Oh, God, there's so many. You know, I think we're only here because of so many people.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, it's hard to just say one person or two people. I would say Vona Gorke, the poet.
Mm.
She's somebody I write letters to all the time, and she writes to me, and we discuss painting and poetry and life and our age and our children. And she's been an incredible mentor for me.
Say her name again.
Vona Gorke.
Vona Gorke. Barbara, what about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with Helen. There are so many people. I mean, I think, you know, I absolutely... my husband, for sure. I mean, so much of what I am able to do is, you know, his understanding as an artist of what I need. And I don't know. I mean, he's a big part of why I can do what I do. Yeah, for sure. That's what I'd say. My husband, Christopher Thomas.
Okay. And where can our listeners find more about you guys and your work? Instagram, website? Tell me the details. Helen, what's your Instagram?
I have no idea.
Let me look it up. I just had it pulled up here.
Yeah, what is it?
It's Helen_O_Leary. Right?
I think there's a couple of underscores. I think those underscores are tricky. It's one of those you can never say. I think it's two underscores.
Helen_O_Leary.
I think there's two underscores each side.
Oh, you're right. It's a double underscore.
I know.
So Helen _O__Leary. You're right. That's so funny. If you just search Helen O'Leary though on Instagram, I do think you come up, because that's how I found you.
And HelenO'Leary.com.
Okay. Barbara.
And I am on Instagram at Barbara Campbell Thomas. That's Instagram. And then BarbaraCampbellThomas.com is my website.
Thank you both so much. This has been delightful. I appreciate your time and just sharing your stories. Lots of quotable moments.
Thank you.
Wise women, thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you.
Yes. The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.